prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, June 17th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Wendy Wilson will be joining us here in just a few minutes, but first we're going to do the market report with gold today up 570 at 1188.20. We have silver up 15 today, cents at 1626. Platinum was up 3 at 1086. Palladium was down 11 at 725. Platinum was up 3 at 1086. And the USDX today was down 0.65 at 94.30. Crude oil was down 0.11 at 59.86. And the paper markets today was, let's see where we're at. The Dow was up 30, struggled, but it was up 30 at 17,935. The NASDAQ up 9. 5,064. The S&P up 4 at 2,100. 10-year yield off its high of the day, 2.31%. And the euro is 113, up 0.80. And European and Asian markets were quiet overnight. And the Feds wants to see further improvement in the economy before they consider raising rates. And we'll talk about, if Wendy is with us, we'll talk about the interest rates and Janet Yellen and the decision to wait until the economy is stronger during the or after the first break. If Wendy is here, good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy. What are we going to talk about today?
I thought we'd talk about chronic acidosis. It's a pH disorder that the body gets. And a lot of people, millions of people actually have this, sometimes in a moderate or a chronic condition. And doctors really aren't informing patients that this really could be the cause of their other health problems. So if you leave it unchecked, acidosis can create really a metabolic meltdown over time that can cause major organ failure. So patients will get a bunch of prescriptions to manage their symptoms, but they really don't get a resolution. So doctors actually describe acidosis as an insulin issue when it's most often a diet issue. So people with acidosis experience a wide range of symptoms, like sometimes it's digestive disorders or kidney malfunction, or congestive heart failure or liver failure, just to name a few. So through the consumption of these unhealthy foods we sometimes eat, it can produce these problems. So when the body breaks down fats, Al and Melody, in your food, acids will get formed. So if the body can't neutralize enough of these acids, they'll get stored in the body. They get stored in fat, or they get stored in organs that become fatty. So if the person's diet is such that the body is asked to get its energy from fat, well, then the acids can be released during that breakdown and cause disease. Now, if there's too many toxic acids stored in the body's fat, well, then the body resists the weight loss to protect itself from these acids. So people with acidosis most often have excess weight around the abdomen. Have you? And I think you probably can just turn on the TV news and see a lot of that, right?
Yeah, I agree. I don't even have to look at the mirror. I can see some evidence of it myself. Not much, but some.
The risk of...
We're talking about, by acidosis, we have too much acid in our system. Our blood is too acidic rather than sufficiently alkaline. You said that the doctors give us treatments that treat the symptoms.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to get to some of those drugs.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to get to some of those drugs in a minute. But what I wanted to mention is there's a lot of habits that we have that can put us at a greater risk of developing acidosis, and they are alcoholism, malnutrition from eating a lot of junk food, excessive sugar that could cause that diabetic disease. But people also who eat a high animal protein and fat diet with very little carbohydrate will also be at a high risk of developing acidosis, because this creates a lot of acid, lactic acid, in the system. And that will harm your kidneys and your liver. And if the acid, as you mentioned, Al, permeates the blood system, it can lead to congestive heart failure or possibly cancer. So in chronic cases of acidosis, a person's breath can smell fruity, okay? That's an indicator. Now, it is not uncommon for severe cases of acid buildup in the system to create shock, coma, and death. So this is serious. You don't want to let this go. And let's talk about that pH that you mentioned, Al. It's really a good idea for people to keep a check from time to time on their pH level. Now, most people can obtain some pH strips, and they can test their own saliva or their urine. But if you want to test your blood, you will have to use a medical staff for that. But the objective is to keep the pH level to a 6.9 if you're testing saliva or urine. Or if you're testing blood, the blood should not be lower than 7.3. Okay? So a lot of doctors will treat their symptoms, as you are asking, Al. They'll treat the symptoms of acidosis. They'll recommend, are you ready? Baking soda, sodium bicarbonate, citric acid drugs, and Alka-Seltzer to lower the acid numbers. And in acute instances, they'll actually give these treatments by IV. So citric acid drugs can be given by IV. So doctors may also prescribe blood pressure, insulin, seizure, nausea, and vomiting medication. So, and many physicians believe that these chronic diseases like heart failure and liver failure and kidney failure and diabetes or heart disease, any of that, they think it causes acidosis, when in fact it's the other way around. The acidosis condition causes these problems. Now, in 1976... I wanted to mention Dr. Robert Cohen. Dr. Robert Cohen and Dr. Frank Woods, in 1976, they discovered that aside from your internal medicine diseases caused by acidosis, it can also occur with the use of prescription medications, which I'll give you in just a moment, as well as various other toxins in the environment and from genetic weaknesses. Okay? But what's your question now?
First off, do you think that the use of the bicarbonate, do you think that's sodium bicarbonate, do you think that's something like a placebo? Is it counterproductive? Does it actually help? I assume it's temporary help.
It is. It's just a symptom reducer is what it is, but it's not going to get at the cause of the acid problem. So it's sort of like, you know, when people with ulcers will drink milk to calm mm-hmm. their ulcer, and it will work for about 20 minutes, a half hour. And then what happens is the stomach, you know, puts on the acid pumps because all the alkalinity in the milk, and that just kicks up the ulcer again. So it's, you know, temporary at it's what it is at best. But let's talk about some of these drugs that can give you this condition of acidosis. Now, drugs can cause people to develop this problem, and they're antibacterial and sulfur drugs. The Merck manual, in particular, points out that synthetic bacterial drugs can be putting people at risk of acidosis conditions. So the drugs will fall under a category called sulfonamides. So these are your antibiotics, your antibiotic sulfur drugs. Yeah?
All right. And they will contribute to. Now, my understanding is we all tend to be too acidic. Well, most of us tend to be too acidic. And in that acidic environment, again, as you've explained, it's conducive to cancer and a number of other diseases.
Yeah.
Well, I lost my train of thought.
What these drugs are prescribed for.
Does acidosis have anything to do with memory loss?
No.
Okay, I just lost my train of thought. Then I'm still good.
Well, acidosis won't produce memory loss, but the drugs that are given to you to treat it may be.
Okay.
But so your various antibacterial drugs for infections like upper respiratory infections or even vaginal conditions, these are the drugs that can lead you at a risk of acidosis.
My question. Are you suggesting that some of the drugs that they give us that supposedly... Are they giving us these drugs to supposedly deal with the acidosis and the drugs themselves contribute to the acidosis, or are they giving us these drugs to deal with a different problem entirely?
Well, the drugs that can put you at risk of acidosis are used to treat other conditions, and
okay.
they just leaves you to that pH imbalance, and that will create acidosis, and then acidosis can lead you down the road to other internal medicine disorders, so... That's kind of like a domino effect. So, but I want to touch on this. Huh?
What about mineral supplements?
Well, we're going to talk about that. Interesting you should ask. Boy, you are spot on there, Al. But I want to touch, before we get to that real quickly, on this weight loss thing. Because a lot of people are frustrated when their weight loss efforts don't seem to be going anywhere. They're exercising, they're counting calories, they abstain from drinking alcohol, and their weight loss is either very slow or just not budging. Well, the problem could be the acidosis, because when the pH is off, the body's metabolism will not function right. And in some test groups, they found that people who with acidosis, they're dehydrated, and their thirst mechanism is not working. And so long-term dehydration will disrupt the normal thirst mechanism, and people who drink alcohol every day or consume lots of drinks with caffeine can throw off their thirst mechanism. So if a normal thirst mechanism is you would feel full, Al, if you drank one or two glasses of water, and then your hunger pangs would be toned down. But in situations of dehydration, the brain has difficulty telling the difference between thirst and hunger. So the body can receive false feelings of hunger when you're dehydrated and you tend to eat too much. And with dehydration comes a rise in acids. So acidosis can cause the body to store more fat, which triggers the dehydration as well. It's a vicious cycle. So if your pH goes below 7.3, as we mentioned, the body will dump minerals stored in your bones, your teeth, and other organs in order to try to counteract that acid. So long-term acidosis can cause bone loss. So the acids can also inflame and scar organs and will use the fat stores to protect itself from the toxic acids. And get this, cosmetic physicians will be the first to tell you when people have liposuction to get rid of fat, the fat comes out all discolored if it's acidy and it's brown and black looking. Yuck.
Well, I understand. Yuck is right.
Well, let's talk about how we can neutralize this real quick because we're running out of time. So if you want to reverse your acidosis condition, obviously dietary changes will be necessary to help you neutralize and balance the acids in the pH. And you want to eat more raw fruits and vegetables to produce that alkaline effect. And you'll want to get into the habit of eating this anyway to avoid the condition in the future. So it's also going to be important to drink more water, avoid that alcohol and all those sugary sodas, teas, and coffee drinks. Herb teas are an exception, and as well as any natural sugar you find in juice, but if you're diabetic, you'll have to cut those juices with 50% more water. So citrus, although does have acids, they have this natural alkalizing effect when in the system, so you can eat your berries and your melons, it's fine. And by the way, the standard garden carrot contains natural nutrients to help combat acidosis, and alfalfa grass is the only mineral-rich antifungal grass that contains 8 essential amino acids for the liver to metabolize and promote more proper pH overall in the system. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it gives us an incentive to go out there and grow some alfalfa.
Yeah.
Instead of we can get some grow lights and then set up some alfalfa plants in the basement and hope the power company doesn't report us to the SWAT team.
Yeah.
No, I'm just growing alfalfa. You don't understand.
Yeah. Well, if you're a meat eater, though, you want to try to curtail the meat portion to maybe 4 ounces or less, because meats put more acid in the system, and when we cook them, we get more acids. They change chemically and become more acids. So, with acidosis comes these other diseases it creates. And if you put some herbs and some dietary changes into the body, you can reverse this acidosis and get rid of the acidy residues. So personally, if I had acidosis, what I would do is the system organ cleanses we refer to from time to time here, from the bowel to the blood system, and body food mix has the alfalfa in it. And you can remove a lot of those residues that can inflame tissues and organs and help them regenerate. So really, when you cleanse, you have this trickle-down benefit. All your glands of the body, like your pancreas, your thyroid, thymus, adrenals, also in your lymphatic system will benefit, which helps to balance your pH overall. So it's putting the power back into the people's hands. That's what I love to do. Like you guys, you like to give them, you know, financial power. So I try to give them healthy power.
I understand. And the point behind both of us, in a sense, is people have to take responsibility for their own health, their physical health, as well as their financial health. You have to make your own choices and discipline yourself to do what's best, which is hard to do in a world full of ice cream and Hostess cupcakes and that sort of thing. It's and big steaks. Hard to discipline yourself to do the right 6 packs of cold beer. I mean, it's hard to discipline yourself.
Well, and I feel really sorry for some of the people over in the European countries where they've lost 1,500 of their herbs. They've just been, you know, made illegal for them to have. And but then again, they can go across the street and get all the beer, wine, and tobacco they'd like, you know.
I understand. We live in interesting times, that's for sure. Why don't you give folks some contact information, Wendy?
Sure. They can call for a free product catalog. We'll send it to them in a first-class mail, 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663. If they're online, it's thepowerherbs.com, thepowerherbs.com. That's where your healthcare options just became endless. Thanks, guys. See you next week.
All right, Wendy. Thanks very much. Very interesting. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. And her number is 866-229-3663. Give her a call. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a couple of moments as soon as we get done with a couple of commercials. Please stay tuned.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. five concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, we do have a special today, 90% silver, and it is going to be $25 face value. And we also got a new batch in of $5 Liberty gold pieces, almost uncirculated. They're beautiful uncirculated $5 Liberty gold pieces. And that little package is $710, and that does include all shipping costs. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188, 90% silver. And it will be a coinage of our choice. It could be quarters, dimes, or 50-cent pieces, or a mixture, or whatever we have in inventory. But it will equal out $25 face value and one AU $5 Liberty gold piece, all for a total of $710. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to the programs archived. You can listen live and archived. So make sure you get to the website. We had mentioned we were going to talk about the Federal Reserve. They're leaving rates unchanged.
Yep.
They came out today. I don't think this was really a big surprise to anyone. And, of course, we see Janet Yellen must be paying attention to Christine Lagarde and the IMF. Of course, that was the warning. We spoke about it yesterday with Greg Hunter, warning to do not raise rates. Christine Lagarde said wait till 2016.
Well, we've got an article from CNBC says keeping a tight lid on its future intentions. The Federal Reserve on Wednesday held interest rates steady at zero. Now, as you were saying, it's not such a big surprise to everyone. Where people are talking about, well, they're going to raise rates, they're going to raise rates, they're going to raise rates. No one knows when, but on the other hand, what we do know is they've held these rates near zero for about 7 years. And, you know, if you want to bet the odds, you know, you keep on betting they're not going to raise rates or not. You're going to get caught one of these days, but just the same, they will raise rates one day. But not necessarily, certainly not now. And even according to the report, people have thought about it. They've thought it might happen in September, but there are others that are calculating. Chicago Mercantile Exchange, they've indicated they think the higher probability is next December, which is pretty close to Christine Lagarde saying, oh, don't raise it until next year, 2017. Well, December 2016 is not so far from 2017, and then we're just talking about that. We still don't know when these rates are going up, and the government says it's because all the economy is getting better. They talk about the still fragile recovery. And for me, that's like looking out the window and saying, look, a unicorn. The still fragile recovery is for most people the pretense of a recovery. It may be the recovery's worked out pretty well for the top 1% or perhaps even 10% of Americans. But it hasn't been that obvious for the rest of us. And I think that's a real reason why the Fed is sitting on these interest rates and not making the move. They're concerned that the recovery, they are concerned that the recovery is largely illusory. They're concerned that if they raise the rates, the illusion of the recovery may be damaged, even shattered. And the numbers just aren't there. The interest rates, the inflation rate is somewhere between 1% and 2%. They claim they want 2%. They say it's between 1% and 2%, too low from the government's perspective. The jobless rate has fallen to 5.5%, according to the government, but has it? You know, the way they calculate the books, and you all know this, you've heard us talk about it in the past, but the way the government keeps the records and cooks the books. Does anyone really know what the inflation rate is in this country? Does anyone really know what the unemployment rate is in this country? We know what the official rates are. We know what the government is telling us, but does the government tell us the truth? And the answer is not always, right? In fact, when it comes to truth-telling, I'm trying to think, when was the last time the government told the truth, Melody?
Tuffy. Uh-huh.
There's a question for you. There's a question for the answer, man. When was the last time the government told the truth? Anybody know? Trying to think. Nope, I can't remember it. So in any case, no surprise exactly. But the Federal Reserve is going to have to raise that interest rate sooner or later. And I even think it might be a good idea, and I've talked about this on the program in the past, where with a digital currency, this wouldn't have happened if we still had gold and silver for our money, but with a digital currency, when the Federal Reserve lowers the interest rates, lenders can move their currency at the speed of light across the Atlantic Ocean or across the Pacific Ocean to other countries and markets that pay a higher rate of return. And the net effect is when the Federal Reserve reduces the interest rate, supposedly to stimulate the economy, some percentage of the money base, the quantity of money that would otherwise be available in this country, moves offshore. And I think the net effect may be they lower the interest rate and they say this should stimulate the economy. Yeah, but the lenders say, I'm not lending money for 1% or 2%. You think I'm crazy? So I'm going to lend my money to Africa or someplace in Europe or Asia or South America where I can get 5, 6, 8% on my money. All right? I'm not lending it here in the States for just a couple of percent. The money goes out, the property, the monetary base is eroded, and the economy tends to stall, tends to slow. From my perspective, if that analysis is unconventional, but if it's true, and I think it might be, I think if they raise the interest rates, people say, oh, my gosh, the interest rates are up. Yeah, but there's money to be borrowed now. It would perhaps increase the money supply, and perhaps the increase in the money supply would do more to stimulate the economy than rising interest rates did to stall the economy. So we'll watch and see. I'm not convinced that raising the interest rates will be a bad thing. Here's another article. We've got 8 epic business flops with Trump's name on them. This is in Money Magazine. Now, just yesterday, Donald Trump threw his name into the ring as an official candidate for president in 2016. He says, I'm using my own money. I'm not using lobbyists. I'm not using donors. Now, that's pretty impressive to me all by itself. The guy's not for sale. That's the implication. He will get, assuming he were elected, he would, and he didn't take any money from anyone to get there. It would mean he would not be obligated to the people who might otherwise say, look, I gave you $100,000, a quarter million, $500,000, whatever. So you could win, and now you owe me. Pass some laws. They'll do me some good. I might not be obligated. I'm impressed by that. The point to this article, however, in Money Magazine, from my perspective, they name eight business flops with Trump's name on them. That's a pretty fast reaction to Trump's candidacy. They don't want him to be president. And I mean, he announced as president yesterday, and today they've got this article. It's as if they've had this thing in the can, waiting to spring it on Donald just in case he was going to run.
Well, it was no surprise that he, I mean, it's been known for a long time that he was going to make this announcement, so it wasn't that much of a surprise.
Well, it still strikes me as awfully quick. He announces on Tuesday, and on Wednesday they've got an article that condemns him and says, they ask him why he's running, and Trump pointed to his business sense and declared, we need somebody that can take the brand of the United States and make it great again. Well, I don't know about the brand of the United States. I'm not convinced that that's the way to think about these things. I'm thinking in terms of liberty, for example, and unalienable rights declared in our Declaration of Independence, more so than the brand. You know, the brand is too commercial from my perspective, but still he's arguing that he's got the business sense to turn this government around. They're writing this article and say, no, he's messed up on a bunch of instances. They talk about Trump Air Shuttle, which he launched in 1989. That was out of business by 1992. All right, but we're still talking, what, over 20 years ago? You know, 25 years ago, something like that. Trump the game, again, 1989. This was also a failure, but we're talking 25 years ago. Trump Magazine came out in 2007, 9 years ago, didn't work. GoTrump.com, it's a travel search engine, 2006, a failure. Trump Casinos, 2013, that's just a couple of years ago that they started in 1980s, and they failed ultimately by 2013. That's fairly recent. Trump Mortgage, another business, started in 2006, 10 years ago, failed a few years later. I don't know that this list of failures is, you know, how relevant is it? Because many of the failures that they've cited are 25 years ago. Should anyone be allowed or dissuaded from running for president based on his failures of 25 years before he runs for president? I'm skeptical of that. But still, what I'm trying to get across is it seems like a fast reaction. Mr. Trump he's got some enemies. He's got some adversaries, and they're in positions of power within mainstream media. And so maybe he's going to have a bumpy ride. We'll see.
Well, in addition to his failures, they should have listed his successes.
I understand.
And I understand that, you know, Trump's father was a big real estate man who made, you know, tons of money, and you know, and I think if
and,
he,
and, it, and
Which,
but Donald,
you know, he
had
was,
the good sense to inherit that money.
He had the good sense to inherit, you know, that.
He had the business sense. Dad died, and I knew right away. My business acumen was such that I knew right away, get the money. And he did.
So the one thing that I thought that perhaps he would address is say, hey, you know, I made mistakes in the past, but, you know, in the past 10 years, this is what we've done. And he hasn't said that yet, but, you know, perhaps it will in the coming. He did say something interesting this morning on an interview. He says that this country is in a bubble, and he says it's going to get nasty.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it you know, again, then he was saying, I'm the only one that to bring us out of that at that time.
Why do you think he might be the only one to bring us out of it? Or why do you think he thinks that?
Well, because he's been there before. He's had several bankruptcies before. And, you know, he is a businessman. Yeah. And this country is run, you know, we talk about this all the time. It's an economy and it is a business. And I'm not sure his... you know, like you mentioned, there's a lot of things that he's not saying about our liberties, and, you know, to that degree. But there's lots of time. There's a long time to go, a year and a half. So,
I'm looking forward to Trump being in the contest, and I think one of the reasons why he could solve the problem is because he's not a Democrat, and he's not really a Republican. He may be running for the Republican nomination, but, I mean, he's not really a politician. I mean, he's there, but he's kind of an auxiliary member of the Republican Party, and he is not personally liable for any of the policies that have helped to drag this country down. He doesn't have to deny fundamental causes. His background would allow him to face the issues and say, look, here's the problem. Here's what has to be done. Where some people in the Republican Party and some people in the Democrat Party, they can't admit what the problem is without essentially indicting their own political party. Maybe his distance from Washington allows him to perceive objectively and admit the problems, where some candidates, they're going to have to try to evade the problem, try to deny that the problem is the fault of the Republicans or the Democrats or whoever. What else have we got, Melody?
Oh, I just hope he's not doing this as a Ross Perot. I mean, if he's doing this, I hope he does it seriously. And I don't think he's the answer to everything, but I think he could very well be play an important part in bringing us, or at least being there and having some positive impact.
Yeah, I think so. I think he,
when it hits the fan. Now, by again, if he gets elected, it's still going to hit the fan. But he'll be able to deal with situations perhaps differently than your typical politician.
Well, he's going to have a little, without being obligated to every politician, without being really obligated
yet
to either of the parties, he'll have an opportunity to. More flexibility,
and once
more
he gets,
honesty, more integrity, perhaps. We'll watch and see.
But once he gets in there, I mean, if you believe that most of our presidents are guided by puppets, they're just the puppet, and they do what they're told, he'll get a little bit of a shock that all his promises during his campaign perhaps can't be completed due to, you know, those that control.
Well,
the
one of the things
various...
he said, we're in a bubble. He said it's going to be a mess.
Yes, he did.
And what he's doing with those statements is essentially distancing himself from responsibility for the bubble. Whoever is responsible for the bubble, it's not Donald Trump. All right, he's essentially saying, look, the Republicans created the bubble. The Democrats created the bubble. I didn't create it, but I'm pointing it out now. We'll talk about the bubble, and we'll prove that the other candidates are complicit in causing the bubble, and I am not complicit, and therefore maybe I can help solve this problem. I'm the one who can point it out.
he makes you want, like, he's a Patrick Buchanan, you know. They have that personality to attract, and you can listen to him, and it'll the debates will be interesting.
I agree with that.
Debates will be fun.
I agree that the debates with Donald Trump should be among the most interesting we've ever seen.
Yes.
There's going to be people screaming and shouting. I mean, there are people going to hate having him in the campaign.
And I don't think...
All by itself, that makes the campaign worthwhile.
I don't think they will try to do to him what they did to Ron Paul. They will ignore him, but he will not be ignored.
No, I don't think so. And he
will not be ignored.
He's got enough money to buy whatever media time he needs to get the attention that he wants.
Yeah, but the debates are important.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If they don't, you know, they can try to ignore him and only ask him a question like they did, you know, Ron Paul.
There'll be a moment in the debates, and what's he going to say, Melody? He's going to look at one or more of the candidates and say, "You're fired!" And at that point in time, the audience just might go wild. Yay! Yay! It might be one of the historic moments in next year's campaign.
Here's an interesting article I found today.
Well, I tell you, why don't we save that until after we get done with our commercials? We're due to take our commercials now.
Already? Okay.
Somebody got to keep track of this stuff. I'm not the only one who runs over on these and these time segments. See, you do the same thing once in a while, Melody. So we're going to take a break for some commercials, and Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. Alfred Adask, Melody Cederstrom, Financial Survival. We're back. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just thought this was interesting. The federal regulators put restrictions on mortgage businesses of 6 different banks. The Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, which is part of the Treasury Department, they announced this action against banks J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, U.S. Bank, HSBC, Santander, and the EverBank because they didn't complete the requirements that was enforced on them back in 2011 due to the way they handled the foreclosure process without carefully reviewing documents. A lot of it also the so-called robo-signing scandal. Of course, they paid some $8 billion to the governments. And so I just found that interesting. I think timing is everything. And these banks, you know, just kind of stick a thumb up to them. And, you know, 2011, they don't care to do anything that is, you know, that was ordered by them, by the government. And does it mean anything? Probably not. But I just thought the timing was sort of interesting. And
it's taken the government 4 years to respond.
Just goes
and there's a couple of possible lessons here. One is that the government is just so slow moving. All right, it's like trying to march through a swamp that's full of molasses. Government doesn't move quickly. All right, not usually. And in this case, it's taken them 4 years to react. Now, whether that's evidence that the government is simply so slow moving that you can't expect a quick response out of the government, or whether it's evidence that the government was simply saying, look, we passed the law, but don't start going after these bankers now. Give them a couple of years to get them get their act straightened out, and maybe the guilty parties can retire and who knows what. Then we'll start enforcing 4 years after we actually, we'll scream and shout now, but we'll do something 4 years from now. What do we got here, Melody? Do we have just incompetence, just natural slow moving, or do we have evidence of some sort of complicity with the banks in order to shield them from maximum liability?
Probably all of the above.
Probably all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I knew you'd say that, and
did
I don't.
You?
I agree with you. I think you're probably right.
Well,
it's still, you know. All right, let's do another one. We've got government paves way for multi-employer pension plan cuts. This is from the Associated Press. The government is preparing to cut benefits over the next few years for hundreds of thousands of retirees covered by underfunded multi-employer private pension plans. The Obama administration announced on Wednesday that well-known mediator Kenneth Feinberg reviews applications from pension plans under a new law passed last year. The law would cut benefits as a last-ditch means to stave off insolvency of troubled plans such as the huge Teamsters Central State Fund. Do you think what they're going to do is cut? They're going to cut benefits to the retirees. This is a way to stave off insolvency. Some of these plants, in fact, later on in the article, they say there's 10 million Americans that are caught in this situation, and they think at least a million of them are going to have their benefits cut to stave off insolvency. Can you think of another way to stave off insolvency, Melody?
Probably.
Yeah.
What did you have in mind?
What I had in mind is, what if they managed the plans responsibly, prudently to begin with, and they prevented the plans from being ripped off and robbed? How about that? You know, I can remember my dad telling me back when I was a kid. This goes back, and I remember this. I've talked about it before on the program, but I remember this in my mind. I can see we're standing in the kitchen. I think my little sister was there, and it was bright. I can remember it. The image is still strong in my mind, and it goes back 60 years ago, 50 years ago, and 55 years, something like that. I don't remember. But I'm talking to my dad. He's explaining Social Security to me, and he's explaining that if people just put the same amount of money into a private bank account at the interest rates that were available at that time, and this would be back around 1958, 59, if they put it into, they made their Social Security contributions into a private bank account, by the time they retired, they would have over $1 million of their own money in the bank. Now, if that was true, and I don't doubt it was approximately correct, how come we don't have $1 million in the bank right now when we retire in our Social Security accounts? If we could have done that, the government could have done it. But the government said, forget that. We'll worry about the retirees later. We need the money now for a new giveaway program. We need to stimulate the economy. We need to take the money out of Social Security. We'll give them an IOU, and we'll use the money in the general fund to fund big government. Well, result is we are now going to come on a time when a whole bunch of people thought they'd have some money in their Social Security accounts, and before we're done, they're going to wind up in a situation similar to this new law that will allow multi-employer pension plans to be cut. The beneficiaries aren't going to receive as much as they expected. Why? Because the fiduciaries, the people responsible for managing those funds, have been irresponsible. Money could have been there. Then, same thing with the money you folks have put away for your retirement. You could have had enough money, if the government had been responsible, you could have had enough money to live large. All right, I'm talking about blue-collar workers. Could get to the time of retirement, and they might have $1 million. Instead of $1,200 a month, they might have $1,200, $1,400, or $1,000, whatever. But instead of that a month, they might have had $1 million in the bank. And that's not just $1 million that they could go fritter away on cruises and traveling around the world. And if they cared to, they could do that. But it's also $1 million that, look, if they were semi-responsible and they didn't waste it all, they might still have $500,000 left over when the time when they pass on to leave to their kids and their grandkids. But instead, they're going to have $1,000, $1,200, maybe $1,400 a month. That's what they're going to have. And they're going to hope to get that. And it's not even clear that that'll be available into the distant future. So, what's the solution? We pass a law to cut benefits. And you can bet that when the government gets deeper into the current financial crisis, they will pass more laws to cut benefits and to essentially legalize, authorize, excuse the misfeasance, malfeasance, incompetence, imprudence, outright theft, fraud, whatever has been perpetrated on retirees in both private and public pension funds. And I'm just saying, if you really wanted to stave off insolvency, somebody should have been responsible 20 years ago and 40 years ago to keep these policies running on the straight and narrow. They weren't. So here we are.
And if we were on a fiat currency, if we were not on a fiat currency, if we still had our currency backed by gold, there'd be accountability. We wouldn't have the size of the government that we have, and we wouldn't be having these problems with these pension funds.
I understand.
So again, it all goes back to square one. And what's interesting, talking about the currency, I didn't know. I knew the IMF, and they basically are looking to see if the Chinese yuan to become an international reserve currency through the special drawing rights basket. They've been in Beijing, and I believe that the five-year review of the SDR basket is due by the end of the year, and I guess I thought that this was all coming due in September, October, where this would be done and completed and the new companies would be in. But, and maybe I was just the only one that didn't know this, but July, the IMF's team's preliminary assessments to label reserve currency status for the yuan is going to be announced in July. So okay. That will give us an indication. I think that's a big deal.
Do you have any idea when in July?
They just said it will be announced in July.
Okay.
So the selections of currencies for the SDR, there's some other countries that are trying to get in there also. The selection of currencies for the SDR baskets are based on two criteria, the size of the country's exports and whether its currency is freely usable. So I thought that was interesting, and so we might have a little more insight come July about whether or not the Chinese yuan is going to be part of the special drawing rights basket.
What do you think? Yay or nay?
Oh, well, you got to know there's a lot of other agreements, and, along with the TPP, I mean, there's a lot of other agreements that all these trade agreements, the BRICS, the other bank that the international bank that they're trying to put together. I don't know. I think they will.
Think
you know, the IMF.
They have to let them in, because I don't know that the IMF and all, I don't know that they can actually survive without China. And if China is, if they throw them out and they say, no, you're not welcome, your currency is not good enough to be part of this basket yet, China says, well, nice talking to you, but we're going to go start our own system with the BRICS, and we'll find out whether you need China, whether or China needs you.
Well, Germany, Australia, France, they've all supported the bid for them for the currency to be added. But we know the IMF does what the U.S. says. So I would think.
The U.S. doesn't want them in there, but it's, yeah. I mean, China, how do you keep them out? How do you rationally keep them out?
And what happens if they don't let them in?
Well, that's what
is China? What is China?
Go up on the BRICS and perhaps find and create an alternative to the IMF that eventually, over a few years, may actually, you know, replace the IMF. If the IMF wants to continue to survive, I think they've got to bring China into this thing. Now, the United States isn't going to like it. The IMF, I don't know what they're going to do, but we live in interesting times. They are interesting. They really are interesting. It's one of the things about, you know, whatever gets us, ladies and gentlemen, it's not going to be boredom. Nobody needs to die from boredom in this world. There's plenty of exciting things happening that you can look at, you can pay attention to, you can learn from, you can speculate about, you can react to. Right? I'm not saying that everyone does, or even a majority do. A lot of us prefer to live in a fairly limited environment, but you don't have to. You can if you want to, but you don't have to. And if you want to stick your neck out, stick your head up out of the sand and look around, you might be surprised at what you see. Some of it will be a little bit scary. Some of it will be a little bit exciting. And in the end, whether you like the view or you don't like the view, we pretty much all have to pull our heads out of the sand, and we do have to look around, because it does appear that we're approaching a difficult time, and all of us need to know, let's see, where am I, and where is the difficult time, and how do I get out of its way? I don't think we can do that while we have our heads in the sand. So, do you think we can maintain the idea that ignorance is bliss? Can it be sustained much longer, Melody, or are we going to be forced to give up our bliss and actually learn something?
What do you think, Al?
Oh, we're going to have to learn things. We're going to be forced. You know, I was talking to, I had a swapped email with a lady that's just 70 years old or whatever, got caught crosswise in a situation where her cows apparently got into her neighbor's field, and he's gotten an $8,000 judgment against her for the damage her cows did in his field. I don't even know if her cows did this damage. She's upset with the decision and the verdict and the rest of that sort of thing, but she had her son there to represent her, and she said her son learned that injustice is not uncommon. And the point behind that, we learn more from our troubles than we do from our successes. And it may be that we are all going to learn a lot. And it may be difficult and painful, but by the time we get through the next 3, 4, 5 years, we may be infinitely wiser than we are today. Not just a handful of us, maybe all of us. We're going to go now, ladies and gentlemen. We're out of time. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye.
All night, I work all day and pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
money, money, always money.